tip today in association with Slattery's of Pecan, your main Peugeot dealer for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Thanks very much indeed, Pat, and welcome back to the final hour of Tip Today. We're live from Neenah today, from the Tip FM Broadcast Centre on Pier Street in Neenah. If you're in the vicinity, if you're shopping in Neenah, and why wouldn't you be, drop in and say hello to us. Trudy is outside, and the rest of the gang, and of course you can call her as well on 1800 938 007. I'm glad to be joined in the studio now by an incredible young man at 27 years of age. Thurles man Darragh Stakelam is the first ever Tipperary person to win the Irish Open Blind Golf Tournament, and he's also captained Ireland in blind football. Only last week qualified for the World Blind Golf Championships in Italy next October. So, Darragh, I'm delighted to have you in studio with us today. We're also joined by Anne Slattery, who's going to talk to us about some fundraising events taking place over the next few weeks. And indeed, your girlfriend, Orla, is with us as well, who refuses point blank to have anything to do with me or say anything to me today. And I suppose I can't blame her whatsoever for that. Darragh, when did you discover that you had a problem with your sight?
Probably December 2015. I was pulling out of a garage and just looked right, glanced left, and pulled out. And before I knew it, there was a car pretty much up behind me. And I was just thinking to myself, geez, I need glasses. So I just had a chest infection over Christmas. I just said, here, I'll go down to the optimal, or go to the eye specialist in Thurles and just see what the story was. And I just went, I was sent straight down to Limerick. So yeah, and just snowballed from there. Spent a week in Limerick in hospital. Then eventually, just in April 2016, was diagnosed with optic atrophy.
And how much sight do you have now?
Zero sight. Yeah.
So within that short period of time, you literally went blind.
I was diagnosed in April. It hadn't gone until probably about October or November 2016. So I'm pretty much blind for about the past year.
And before that, had you any issues with your sight? Or?
No. I was same as any other fella, like playing hurling, football, golf, everything.
Yeah.
Played every sport, 20/20 vision, driving around, no problem.
Fit, active,
yeah. Yeah.
And then this, what is the medical term for what you have?
Optic atrophy. It means trauma to the eyes.
But you can't remember anything that's...
No, I've never had, apart from hurling and things like that, small little things like that, but never anything serious. So, but it can just deteriorate. It's a degenerative disease in your eye.
Right. Yeah. What did this? It sounds like such a stupid question, but tell me about the difference this made to your life. There you were, an active young guy, driving, having the crack, doing all the usual, and here you are then without sight.
Just look, don't get me wrong, it hits you very, very hard. You just, like, your whole life does change. You go from just being very, very independent to relying on Orla and just relying on your family and friends to get you around the place. Yeah, like, you have bad days and good days, but yeah, it really does change your life, yeah.
I can well imagine. What were you doing for a living?
I was working in Aldi, I used to work in Staples Hardware beforehand, so.
Right.
Yeah, so.
And what about now then, in terms of career? And
I'm not working at the minute. I'm just trying to, I suppose, piece back together my life and just get back into. It takes a lot to retrain, say, with the cane. Hopefully I'll be getting a dog in the near future, and eventually then I'll think about getting back into working, but I kind of need to take it step by step at the minute.
Well, you're sort of launching yourself big time into sport anyway, that's for sure. I'm really intrigued. You have to tell me and the listeners, how do you manage to play golf if you can't see?
well, the the golf is, I've always played golf. Like, I used to play off six, so I would be classed as handy.
That's bad. To say the very least, yeah. That's pretty good.
Yeah, so we were, like, just, like, not long after I was diagnosed, I came back from America. Family and friends had paid for a trip to America, which was unbelievable. And we were just messing around on the internet, and we came across this fellow over in Canada that plays blind golf. So we just inquired and to see if there was something in Ireland. And we eventually found out that there was such thing as blind golf in Ireland. So I decided that I'd give it a try. And
how does it happen then? You obviously need help.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. Well, for one, to find a ball would be a good thing.
That's great. You have a sense of humour about it, anyway, that's for sure. So what, somebody helps you place?
Yeah, my guy, Jerry, who's brilliant. We do wreck each other's head, but he does. Yeah, he does. He places the club down behind the ball, normally after some bit of an argument over what club to use, but
right.
He places the club down behind the ball, lines me up, and I swing away, and that's pretty much how it works.
Right, so tell us about the achievements then. I mean, what have you won?
I won the Irish Open. I've won the Captain's Prize, the Irish Captain's Prize, and I won two other of our events that come across during the year, like, you know. So yeah, I've done pretty okay this
year. You've done pretty okay, and you're pretty modest. You've done extremely well indeed. And tell me about the soccer. You play blind soccer?
Yeah, I play blind soccer. I kind of found out through the NCBI that there was such thing as blind soccer, and I said I was asked to go to Nina to try it out, and I was found it, you know, good fun and a bit of crack.
How do you play blind soccer? How does that work?
It's all communication. Everything, there's a bell in the ball. So the ball's like a baby's rattler for all the world.
Right.
So we can follow it around, and we have a fully sighted goalkeeper, a midfield coach, and an attacking coach who all speak to us, telling us where other players are and, you know, things like that. Yeah, so it's complicated, but it does work. And
will there be any diving in that?
No. It's tough. It's a lot tougher than normal football. Yeah. I found it an awful lot tougher. So yeah.
Why? Because there's collision, is it?
Yeah, there's a lot of collisions. Yeah, but that's just part of it. Like, you know, you just get on with it.
I'm gathering from you that sport, if it's possible to make what happened to you a little easier, sport has made it a little easier with it. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Look, I've always been involved in sport. Like, I've always played sport, so I just find it easier to be doing something rather than sitting at home. I know a lot of people that would sit at home.
Yeah.
Especially after being told something.
God, yeah.
As harsh as that. But yeah, it's just, I just find sport is just
one
helps you get out.
I'm really interested to know is friends and family, do they treat you differently now?
Yeah, well, kind of. But some friends would treat you a lot different, but I try and make it as normal as possible. I do crack jokes about being blind and things like that. But look, the likes of Orla is brilliant. Like, you know, she's unbelievable. Like, you know, it's very, it was probably nearly tougher on her than it was on me and family. It was tougher on family than what it was for me, because I can get up. I feel like I can do anything. Like, honestly, you tell me to do something, I'll try my best I'll have a go at it, yeah, definitely. Like even cycling, I went off and did a 60k cycling.
Did you?
Oh, Billy Shanahan had rang me up.
That Blazing Saddles, is it?
Yeah. He the trip to tip, he had got me, he just rang me up and said, here, you're coming doing it. And yeah, I went off and did a 60K cycle one morning with no practice, never been on a tandem bike before. And
it's just absolutely incredible altogether. Anne Slattery is with us. And Anne, of course, fundraising is your thing. And I'm sure, like myself, you're in complete admiration.
Oh, well, I mean, how do you follow that, friend?
Yeah,
you know. I knew Jerry McCormicky's guide, super guy. And he approached me. I was PRO for Thurles Golf Club, so he felt maybe I had a little bit of... I knew a few people. And Jerry and James Farrell, who owns Taffy's Bar in Thurles, they decided to do some fundraising for Dara. So they came up with a very novel idea of having Andy Hamilton, the darts player, to come to Thurles, and people would play against him.
Very good.
So in about 4 weeks, we set about fundraising. And... I must say, I mean, I know Irish people have a reputation for being super with charity, but it really surpassed my expectations.
Did it?
It really, really did. Now, I mean, people were just so good. And I mean, I know we worked hard for 4 weeks, but it wasn't too hard to sell, I must say. It was just, people are super. And then, I mean, Dara is an inspiration. Yeah. I mean, he's the envy of us sighted golfers. Really, you know, because what he's been able to do. So last Saturday night, we had a great crowd. We had a raffle. And if I could take this opportunity, Fran, to thank the businesses in town that were so good. Our local representatives, Jackie Cal, David Dorn, Jim Ryan and Sean Ryan of Littleton. Super. And all the public and the friends and family that were so, so good. And next Saturday night now, we hope to have... presentation of the cheque to Dara. We won't say how much it is. Excuse me.
You wanted to be a surprise.
We want it to be a surprise, yeah. But I mean, it's. Well, we hope it will help Dara in his sporting pursuits now from here on in.
Right.
And so we're having a little bit of music and a bit of finger food. And
that's happening where again?
So that's all in Taffy's Bar in Parnell Street in Thurles at 9:30. And I would like also to thank James Farrell, the owner of the bar, and his staff for all their help and their work. I mean, Taffy really was the driving force behind bringing Andy Hamilton, and he was so generous with his time last Saturday night with everybody, and it was just a good fun night, and we did very well out of it, you
right.
know.
Right, and it's something different as well.
Well, yeah, you need the novelty. Yeah. You need the novelty thing nowadays. I mean, I know every cause is a good cause, but you need something to bring in the people, something a little bit different.
Course.
And I must say, it was super.
Don't tell me, Dara, you tried darts.
Yes.
Oh, I did, yeah.
We actually did. We thought actually it would be very good to start, open the night with, blindfold Andy Hamilton and Dara, and that's how we opened the night, and it was a great opener.
Very good.
Everybody
did
was safe.
Everybody run for cover?
Yeah. Oh, definitely, yeah. It was
very good
funny,
indeed. Yes. Tell me, Jerry is your guide. What does that mean? Is he with you quite a bit? Or?
Yeah, he's with me quite a bit for the golf. It drives me around up to all our events in Ireland and, you know.
Yeah.
So, yes, he's brilliant when it comes to, lining me up, putting... bunker, everything, I do need a guy to get around, you know, so yeah, it's...
And you'd have a bit of argy-bargy as well, then.
Oh, we can do, yeah. it's all forgotten about.
I'm very interested to know, does the other senses heighten to make up for the lack of sight?
You're told no, but you just become more aware of your surroundings and better equipped. You rely on your hear an awful lot. So, yeah, you do.
So it becomes more acute in some
way,
doesn't
it? Yeah, it becomes more acute. It doesn't become better.
Yeah.
Technically, it doesn't become better.
And now you're in an ideal position to tell me, I mean, how are we set up for people with limited sight or no sight or... you know, in terms of footpaths, access, blah, 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 lights across streets, all of that.
Well, footpaths... You know, obviously can be better everywhere around the country because especially with the tactile pavement, you know, crossing roads, things like that, some places just don't have it. Hopefully that will change. Pedestrian crosses, things like that, they're, you know, fairly okay. People in cars kind of need to be more aware, especially at zebra crossings and things like that.
When you first ventured out like that, I presume it was a frightening experience, was it?
Well, say I do a lot of training with my stick and things like that. So the NCBI are great in that way. So they'll train you.
Mm.
And then you'll eventually get more and more confident, so you'll eventually venture outside by yourself. Yeah.
So it's very Orla. You won't talk to me, will you?
Okay.
I just thought I'd try again to see what the story. Will you sit in and have a quick word with me? Sit in there for a second, seeing that we've been discussing you and you sitting over there. Of course, you were stepping out, as they used to say years ago, with Dara before the sight loss.
Yeah.
So what? I mean, it must have been a huge, huge difference for you too.
Yeah, it was. Geez, it was great. A shock.
Just come a little closer to that for me. Yeah.
It was crazy. Like it's so different now to what it was at when we first got together, Sage. You know, but I think we're getting on fairly well now, and.
Yeah.
We're learning to deal with it all now. It's becoming easier.
Is it becoming easier?
It is becoming easier, yeah. It does get easier. Like, it's tough. Like, you can't explain to somebody what it's like when somebody loses their sight. And, as you said, I found it very hard as well. It was a total change of our whole life, like, but...
Yeah, when first heard about it, what were you thinking? What was going through your head?
Well, when he first went in, I just thought he'd be grand.
Yeah.
They'll fix them. Like, you know, it's not as bad as what it was. But obviously, when we told he went down with his mother and his aunt Bernadette down to the hospital, I actually was working that day, so I couldn't go with him. But which annoyed me. I should have been there. You know, that kind of way. But he came home and he said, and I still didn't believe it. Mm-hmm. I didn't believe it for months.
Yeah.
I will say that I just you'll be fine. You don't. But then it. It started to get worse, and you'd notice it, like we kind of noticed it week by week that it was slowly going.
You were frightened for him, obviously.
I didn't want him to know. It's because he's so young, and like Dara's so outgoing the whole time, like, and I didn't want it to affect him that he wouldn't be able to go outside and do anything. But he's unbelievable, like, oh my god, he just went out and done everything, like, doing the golf and the soccer, and like. He's brilliant. Like,
so you must be very proud of him.
Oh, I'm so proud of him. I am. Yeah.
Isn't it great altogether?
Yeah, really,
I don't know why you said you wouldn't talk to me.
I can still talk to you all day. Once you get me going at all.
Yeah, we won't get you off the radio.
Yeah, I could take your place there for the day now.
Well, listen, you're welcome to take my place for the day. Fantastic. And, you know, when you think about the future then, is that something you can talk about, you can plan for, or is it a day-to-day situation? Or what?
We kind of try to just do it day by day. I'm a type of person that likes to think about future and all that, but the way we are now, we kind of take it day by day. You need to, because there's something that could, you know, there's always something there with it, but I don't know. We take everything day by day, don't we?
Yeah,
yeah,
we do.
We get on with it.
It's the best way to go.
Yeah.
It's the best way to go. I presume it's a great test of people in terms of the people who hung around and stuck with you and all of that too, you know?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Friends, like, you really know your true friends, like, you know, and even the likes of Peter Ryan and things like that, that we weren't the best of friends when we were in school, but ever since I found out, I kind of got in contact with him, and we met up for breakfast yesterday morning at 8:30. It was an ungodly hour for me, so it was ringing me. So, yeah.
And Peter himself has sight loss, doesn't he?
Peter has just a small bit more than me, and we seem to manage to get around the place between the two of us.
Yeah, and again, like yourself, he's an inspiring character. He's done loads too, you know.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
That's so great to see him. Yeah. Well, listen, I'm delighted to meet you both today. We finally got Orla to talk to us, and which was great. You're a gorgeous girl, by the way. You're a lucky fella, I can tell you. Just to remind us again, about next Saturday night
in Taffy's Bar in Parnell Street.
Right.
We're having, it's more of a formal occasion to last Saturday night, I suppose. We just want to thank everybody. We'll present Dara with the big check, and it will be really a time for everybody to get together and say thanks. And we have something else in the pipeline for April, golf-wise, but that's down the line because, you know, he's doing so well. He'll need as much as he can get from us. But I personally, I have to say, I'm just in awe of Dara. All and right. I just want to thank Tip FM and Tip Prairie Star and all the media that have been so kind to us to put this cause forward. Because, as I said, every cause is a good cause. But we're just thrilled to be able to do this for Dara.
Absolutely. And I presume we're going to get Orla to get give a speech next Saturday night as well, now that she has the hang of all
well,
of this.
Well, absolutely, Fran. Now that I've heard her being so eloquent, certainly she'd be first up to the mic.
Dara, Orla and Anne, it was lovely to see you all today. You cheered me up and thanks very much indeed.
Thank you, Fran.
It's 11:23 right now. We're live from Nina. We're back with more in just a few moments.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.
And our psychotherapist, Joanna Berkeley, is with me in studio again. Morning to you, Joanna.
Good morning, Fran.
You're going to talk to us today about anxiety. And it's one of these conditions I think is always confused. What from your point of view, what is anxiety?
Anxiety is what I call unnecessary suffering. It's unnecessary mental suffering about stuff that either has happened or is going to happen, but it's never about the present moment. So when you think that if I'm sitting here with you and I'm talking about a conversation I had yesterday or a conversation I had even with my hairdresser last week, and I feel that I didn't say something nice or I said something wrong or insulting and I'm back there and I'm really anxious about it, or going forward I'm really anxious about Christmas coming up and my in-laws coming and I'm really anxious about that, it's worry about either our history, which is our past, or our imagination or fantasy, which is our future, and not being in the present moment. And so many people live in a constant state of heightened anxiety, and now they consider it a norm. They consider that this is the normal way of being in life, and it's not at all.
And that anxiety, is there a feeling of, is there fear involved in it?
Sometimes, and this, people will say now, oh, I know this one. The fear usually is the fear of the anxiety. It's almost like I know what anxiety feels like. It on a physical level, I get sweaty palms. I don't anymore. My heart might start pounding. I might feel dizzy. But then what happens is that that's my anxiety state. But then I get anxious about going, having anxiety.
Of course, yeah.
So I'm going, like, I have a wedding, and let's say crowds make me anxious. So I'm now going, oh God, you know, I'm going to this wedding and I'm going into the church, in a small church, and now I'm going to get anxious. So we become frightened of the anxiety, or we become anxious about the impending anxiety, and then the whole cycle tightens and it becomes much more harder to get out of.
It's sometimes lumped in with depression. And is that doing it a disservice? Because I presume it's a separate kind of a condition, or is it?
I think it's a separate condition, but what happens is when people find them in a depressed state, because we all hit depression on a bad day in the week if we're tired or if stuff has gone on. But if you're in a prolonged period of flatness and dullness, we get anxious about it.
Okay.
So that's why it's confused. The anxiety is confused with the depression, because we're anxious about, is this dark cloud ever going to lift? You know, we've just come through November and it was a tough November, you know, weather-wise and stuff. So we're going, oh my God, I'm in this dark cloud. Is it going to lift? And the anxiety comes in around our condition, rather than anxiety and depression being of the, you know, siblings, they're more like.
And are there particular personalities that are prone to it? I mean, I remember my poor mother, God rest her, would always answer the phone with, what's wrong? You know, are there personalities that are worriers and more prone to being anxious?
I think it's something that we learn from our family of origin. Like, I don't want to start getting personal again with you, friend, but do you carry that anxiety?
Yes, of course. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I always think the worst.
Always think the worst.
Always the worst is going to happen, yes.
And what and how much you're robbing yourself of what's good today.
I know, yeah. I realise that. Mm. But that's why I'm just asking, are there particular person, or is it, as you say, is it learned?
I think it's learned,
is it?
And
yeah.
It's also, I think our as parents, we teach our kids coping mechanisms, but we really teach them more by our doing than our saying.
Mm.
Like if we eat our meals really fast, they're sitting with us and they'll eat their meals really fast, and then they think that's the norm.
Mm.
They think it's the norm to be in this cusp of, you know, speaking really fast. You'll hear people saying, oh, everybody in my family talks fast.
Mm.
Because probably there's not much time for everybody to get their word in. So this tendency. So we pick it up as a very, very young age.
Mm.
And for people out there, sometimes, you know, I have a very good exercise that I can't really explain on air. But for people to feel their feet on the ground, if they're in that anxiety moment, and feel their feet and almost imagine that you're a tree and that your feet are rooted into the earth like a tree would be, and breathe from your feet up through your body, right up through your knees, hips, lower abdomen, chest, head. Pause at the top of the breath and let your jaw drop open, because this is where we hold a lot of anxiety. And then you breathe out like a big sigh, not like you're blown out a candle, but like a...
to letting go.
So you're letting go. Some people are good to breathe in, but they don't do the letting go. So three of those breaths can actually defuse an anxiety episode very, very quickly. Especially like for someone like you who knows that, you know, this worry isn't serving me well. Mm. It's robbing me of my energy. I'm not able to enjoy the present moment. I'm always waiting for what's wrong, almost inviting it into your life. That these three breaths kind of, you're pulling in from Mother Earth, so you feel the nourishment and the strength of Mother Earth, and then you're dropping and giving back out, and it brings you into your present moment awareness, and you go, oh yeah, maybe, you know, I'm worried about X, Y, or that wedding next week, but you know, today I'm not at the wedding. So, and it almost brings you back into a more balanced, equal
It's very
place.
Interesting. Funnily enough, if I were to examine situations where I would feel particularly anxious, I notice in particular my shoulders are up around mm-hmm. my ears. Is that very common, that too?
It always hits our body somewhere.
Yeah.
Some people will get a gut reaction and they could have diarrhea, they could have constipation. Some people, their stomach will go into
a knot. It would be that profound, would it?
Yeah, easily. Wow. Some people, their stomach would go into a knot. Some people may just, and I'm not saying just, but I'm just...
Mm.
It's the smaller symptoms of sweaty hands, sweaty forehead, sweaty chest. Some people will find their shoulders get really tight and tense. But even in that breath, for you, feeling your feet on the ground, feeling rooted into the earth, and as you breathe up, as you breathe out, to concentrate on your shoulders letting go.
Mm. Of course, being anxious is a natural reaction to something where you're in peril in some way too, isn't it? I mean, there is a good part of being anxious, I suppose.
Absolutely.
You know?
It's a huge motivating factor. Like if I'm going on holidays, it's amazing. I'll get anxious. I'll go, God, I need to get this done.
Yeah.
I need to get that done. I need to get dog food and I need to get
or
my
I need to keep
packed.
Myself safe in some way too,
yeah.
You know.
And also, yeah, and but then you get the workload done much quicker when you're in that heightened state.
Okay, right.
And yeah, if I'm anxious, like if I'm walking in Dublin next week in the middle of the Christmas rush hour, I will certainly have my bag a lot tighter to me than I might have. So it's more a heightened awareness.
Right, but it's when it becomes debilitating in some way.
Yeah, and when it becomes constant, and when it becomes a situation that you, like, let's say I'm staying in a hotel next week in Dublin and I'm walking up to Bordgosh to a show and I'm walking back. Well, the very minute I get back into my hotel and into my room, I can go, that's great now.
Okay.
Probably shouldn't have walked in the streets in Dublin on my own, but I let go that that heightened anxiety right. for that short period of time. But it does keep us more alert and it does keep us more aware right. of what's going on.
Well, sometimes. I suppose to continue with the analogy you have, when you're in your hotel room, you said, oh God, I have to go out in that again tomorrow, and will I be safe, and will I get mugged, and will I... That's when it becomes a problem, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and that's yeah. almost like your self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You go out and you expect the worst, and you know.
So what is the secret then, Joanne, to try and live in the moment that you're in?
The secret is definitely the breaths really, really help. The other thing is that if you YouTube, you know, meditations for anxiety, there's some fantastic, I mean, a 5-minute meditation, they can really work. And start realizing that you're not on your own with it, and it's unnecessary. It's not serving you well.
But it's awareness of it too, because we might be anxious. We might even realize we're anxious, but we're
yeah,
all
I think
up to
that's,
90.
Yeah, that's yeah. what I'm saying. It becomes almost like a habitual state of
the way
being
we are.
That
we're
always
yeah.
are in this state. And it's, yeah, we get anxious, we heighten in our anxiety, but we need to drop it.
All right.
So that's why that breath work is really good. Make sure you concentrate on the breath out and letting go.
I'm going to go away and do that straight away. Listen, if people, after they take those deep breaths, want to talk to you, how can they do so?
086-338-3398 and leave a message. I'll get back to you.
All right, Joanna, thanks very much indeed.
1-800-938-007.
And of course, you can text on 083-311-3311 and the all-important email address at any time of the day or night is tiptoday@tipfm.com. It's reading today that Irish householders and firms are most vulnerable to a looming interest rate hike than any other country in the European Union. Now, that's according to a leading government think tank, the ESRI. Said a so-called normalization of monetary policy in the Eurozone, unwinding quantitative easing policies designed to deal with the economic crash, could have a greater impact on Ireland's economy than any other member state. Now, the ECB is expected to hike interest rates in 2019. We just said we'd tell you this just basically to cheer you up as we approach Christmas week. But the think tank said that a jump in mortgage payments would put homes at risk and more households would default. Now, it said house prices could continue to rise for up to 7 years. So there you go. As I say, cheery news there. Trudy, you're going to have a look at what's coming in on text.
Yeah, Helena was in touch to say, hi, Fran. Lovely to hear Dara on the radio. Fantastic person and doing fantastic at the golf. And yes, indeed, put me to shame anyway. It's just unbelievable.
You know, I was removed from a golf course one time.
Why?
Because
is that the clubhouse now or the course?
No, from the golf course. I nearly killed a guy with a golf ball. It just sort of bypassed his head.
You never heard the word four, no?
Four. Yeah. I got such a shock with where the ball was going that I couldn't speak.
Well, I'd imagine he got more of a shock now. So
well, that's
I'd say
why.
He did.
He came up, he was bigger than me. He asked me to remove myself. I know it's a long time ago, but I did. I didn't question it with him. Sorry, I digress.
Was that your first and only time on a golf
Absolutely,
course?
Absolutely, yes. Because I wouldn't be seen dead in some of the clothing, you see.
No, you see, that's a myth. You don't have to wear any of that. It is not at all.
I'm colorblind and I know they're wearing odd colors.
No, I mean, yes, some people can choose to wear said attire, but not at all, not at all.
Go on. You swear you were a golfer or something. You know?
No, God, not at all. Not at all.
All right. I go along with Mark Twain. He said it was a good walk wasted.
That's absolutely not true. But anyway, we're not going to go into golf.
No.
Right. excuse me. Good Lord, there are loads of frogs in my throat today. Fran, the vocabulary being used in regards to abortion is quite confusing. The use of choice is a case in point, according to one of our listeners. In a country where capital punishment is not even on the cards, how can lay people be given power to decide who lives or who dies? As you said yourself, when you left that woman speechless recently, are you talking about taking a life? We actually had another caller on to us as well who had taken exception in relation to comments made by the Children's Minister. I suppose all of this now surrounds the committee today and decision on voting on it. And he felt, you know, she's the Children's Minister, and on one hand she's calling on people who know the children are being abused to contact TUSLA, and on the other hand then she's supporting a bill in regards to repeal the 8th, and he feels that she's contradicting herself because obviously the rights of the unborn child and trying to
it's
the Constitution.
It's going to be all so divisive.
It is going to be very, very divisive. Elaine got in touch, and I presume this is all in aid of homelessness. She's wondering, is there anyone with a van who could collect a wardrobe in Haywood Heights and bring it to Wolfstone Street for free? Plus, if anyone has a base case of a double bed. They do an amazing work there at the centre in Wolfstone Street.
It's incredible. In Clonmel.
Yeah, in Clonmel. Yes. Apologies. Yes, in Clonmel. Shocked, I'm upsetting some of my listeners today, but anyway, shocked but not surprised anymore. Was it necessary to use the Lord's name in vain? Apologies, I was repeating what someone else had said, but there you go. Blasphemy makes me so angry. Well, I was just using, I won't say it again. Anyway, with all the non-Tipperary accents I'm hearing, one be forgiven for thinking the station is the BBC. And that comes from John. Well, I'm kind of complimented by that, John, but I certainly not my accent
the BBC.
Anyway. The BBC.
Yes,
pronounced. Right, Fran and Michael got in touch. Fran, TB is very much alive and kicking in Ireland, and children born from 2015 to present aren't getting the inoculation for it. The HSC says it's not to be got and no need for it anyway, saying that TB is gone. But this person knows two people with it at the moment. You're right, it's not gone. No, obviously, you know, it's eradicated in terms of what it was. But yes, the BCG vaccine is given to protect babies against tuberculosis. Now, vaccine stocks for the last number of years, they expired April 2015, and up to this year, literally around the world, it's been very difficult to get the BCG vaccine, and it's a case that's not just here in Ireland, but it's Europe-wide.
And is that why we're seeing a rise in numbers?
I don't know, because the number of cases of TB is still falling in Ireland, so you will have some cases, but it's nothing compared.
Mm. Oh, of course. I mean, it devastated the country.
If you look at figures the latest figure they gave are 2014 and 2015 itself. Now, it would be interesting to see 2016 and 2017 since the BCG is gone, but they were at the lowest level since records began. But remember, the TB that people are seeing now are in adults. They're not in children.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't really quantify that there's a problem. And the HSE says, you know, that most European countries don't give that vaccine to children. Obviously, that was brought in here because TB had a devastating impact in Ireland, as you know. So basically, they say, you know, your baby is not at risk, this is from the HSC, of TB, and you don't need to delay any of your other baby's injections before you get that okay. That BCG. More coming in relation to the toy appeal, and I have to say, since we've been here, two huge bags of toys have come in this morning. Some beautiful stuff.
You fell in love with some of that stuff.
I did. Some fabulous Shrek. I was thinking that could be the mascot for you.
Yes,
yeah. Beautiful tiger, Tony the Tiger. Fabulous. And the lady in question who brought, and she wanted to remain anonymous, but who brought in that bag, she beautifully, because they're plush toys and, you know, when they're putting together, sometimes they can get a little stain just from dust or whatever. So she has them in lovely bags with ribbons, with tied ribbon on top, Christmas ribbon. So she has them in display bags. So she went to the care of taking all of these plush toys and doing that. And we literally just got another huge shipment in, beautiful dolls. And the lady in question said her mother had literally just missed it at Kenyon Street yesterday. So she was able to bring them in for today. So there's books there. She's been collecting for weeks.
What's lovely is that everybody we talk to, everybody knows about this appeal.
Yeah.
Everybody bought into this big time, you know?
And then, just other things. Sorry, also, that lady brought in very tasty buns and pies, to let you know of that. So, yes, in relation to that, Brendan Abbott got in contact in Ross Grey, and he said, as a result of the toy appeal and many other things, he feels that we're doing wonderful work. No, again, you're doing wonderful work. But he says he feels proud to be from Tipperary, and I have to say, I'm extremely proud of every Tipperary person in this county. You've just done amazing work. And I know we keep saying it, and I know people are saying, would you give it over? But seriously, when you see the video of all the toys that are coming out today, I'm telling you. Couple of other issues. Anne got in touch regarding Coolbawn Cross. She says that it's dangerous and at the best of times, but that it's lethal now. She says it's full of holes right across it, and she believes it's a serious accident waiting to happen. She says she's contacted the local council about it and nothing has happened so far, and I was hoping she would come on with us, but she was in a rush and getting into the car and didn't want to be on the phone while talking. And then Mary Ryan got in Moneygall, and our caller who might have offended in relation to the Jesus comments earlier might be upset now too. But anyway, Mary Ryan and Moneygall got in contact to say a couple of things, but the phones are ringing, but I loved this one, that she was at the home of an elderly friend, and this was recently or last year, I'm not entirely sure, but it was noticed that in the crib was the baby Jesus. Now, it wasn't Christmas night, it wasn't Christmas day, and, you know, it was pointed out to her the baby Jesus shouldn't be in the crib at this point. And without blinking, her elderly friend pointed out that the baby was premature. This is a woman in her 80s.
I love it. I love it indeed. Fran says here, as a result of the toy appeal and many other things, I have no doubt that your show on the Tip FM in general is the best in the absolute country. So fair play to everybody involved with that. And that comes in from Brendan Abbott, who is in Ross Gray today. Fran, lovely to hear Dara on the radio. Fantastic person and doing fantastic at golf as well. That's great, isn't it? Another listener says, I have anxiety since a child. My mother was the calmest woman I've known. I don't think anxiety is learned. I believe you're born that way. It's interesting, yeah. And I brought this up when I was speaking to Joanna's, and we chatted about that quite a bit, whether that sort of thing runs in families. I don't know, what do you believe about that? I'm a bit of a worrier, and I know my mum was, for sure, because whenever she picked up the phone to us, it was always, what's wrong? You know, do you think it runs in families?
That's funny. Yeah, it probably, when you say that, because that's kind of what I do when certain people ring. It's the first thing I say, what's wrong? Because I wouldn't consider myself to be, and I'm highly strong, as everybody who knows me. But in terms, and I'll worry about, I don't sweat the small stuff, or maybe I do. But, you know, if you're traveling, I don't, my mother would be desperately concerned that, you know, you're pretty much, and I won't give the example. There was a very sad accident in the county, a couple of months back. And my mother was convinced, because of the circumstances, that it was me, that I was dead. Now, I wasn't, thankfully. Well, I'm very grateful. But she, that was her automatic thought of thousands and hundreds of thousands of people passing on roads throughout the county every day. It was me. So she worries about stuff like that. My father, the house could fall down around his ears and he would snore on. So
I take a bit of both,
you know.
Yeah, because I mean, Joanna's was making the point that it can be a learned behavior, but like you had a mix of calm and maybe somebody who was a warrior as well.
Well, I suppose, do you know what? She's probably right, and I'll give you another example of it. She's revealing stuff here on air, but anyway.
That's okay, it's only between herself.
Yeah, I know. My mother was very nervous about driving, and basically she gave up on the whole idea many years ago, which I'm very disappointed for her because of the freedom that it brings. But I suppose I know why, because when we were children, and while I love my father dearly, he has the ability, as many uncles and aunts will tell us, to destroy a car within such a short period of time. No one knows how he does it. He'll get a brand new car and within months he'll have, and this isn't from hard driving or banging it into walls, it just seems to give up the ghost. So when we were kids, we found ourselves abandoned on the side of the roads in many a location for several hours at a time, as one car after another died or got flooded. On one particular occasion, we had to put our feet up into the seat. We were rescued by a guard at one point. We were 5 or 6. We got a hub. We got spark plugs, I think, off a man in a house another time. This one. So I suppose when it came to me driving, I took my mother's nerves, because her nerves were shot over all this over the years. So it took me quite a while in the beginning to drive. And when I had to drive, I was working in a place where it was a 3-hour round trip on buses and darts and the whole nine yards, and it was 20 minutes over the mountain. The car came, it was a case you either drive it or that's it. Drove it, that was it, never looked back. So the roads are a much safer place to be on them.
Much safer place altogether, I gather. All right, listen, it's good to see you today, Trudy. Thanks very much indeed. Cora was on to us to say that when my sister rings, the first thing I ask her is, who's dead? So there you go now.
The question is she disappointed when nobody is?
When nobody is, yeah, for sure. I see the spending at RTE is to be examined by two ministers to see where the savings can be made. I just find that amazing that it takes two ministers to work out where the savings can be made in RTE. But anyway, Leo Varadkar, he's ordered the review amid threats to close the national broadcasters' orchestras. And the Taoiseach also said that the issue of funding for the orchestras cannot be caught up in a campaign to increase the RTE licence fee. Now, the future of the National Symphony Orchestra and, of course, the Concert Orchestra as well are under review due to the shortage of funds at the national broadcaster. And Mr. Varadkar said that he believes that RTE should keep its two national orchestras. He said that RTE received a significant state and commercial income, and it should be enough for them to do so. So there you go. A lot of our Archie types up in arms over the possibility of losing the orchestras.
But can I say, why is it always the arts that get hit first? Why is it always, given we laud over the Joyces and we laud over, you know, the great artistic figures that we have, whether it be in poetry or whether it be in, you know, in creative art, whether it be in literature, whatever. Mm. But yet, when it comes to cutting budgets, it seems to be the arts that gets it.
But dare I say that RTE are using the orchestras as a sort of leverage to say, we need more funding and all of that. That's it for me. Truly Produced. Owen is on the way and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Of course, we'll be back, Nina, on Friday, and we're looking forward to that too. Look after yourselves. Bye-bye.